Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Ahead on the show today, live music in our studio from Alejandra Ribera. She is a Canadian singer-songwriter, and she'll perform songs from her new album La Boca here in the studio. Plus, we'll take a look back at a classic record from the summer of 1994. It created a frenzy for a hypnotic but hard-to-describe genre called trip-hop. We'll celebrate the 20th anniversary of the album Dummy by Portishead. But first, we're kicking off something special this week, and joining me to introduce it is Soundcheck's executive producer, Joel Meyer. Hey, Joel.
Hey, John.
I want to say, first of all, this was not my idea, what you're about to announce, but go ahead.
Okay, well, here's the deal. The staff and I think you're not really working hard enough.
Oh, well, that I can't argue.
Yeah, with, I mean, the two daily shows about music, the concert hosting, we feel like there's a little more work that we can squeeze out of you. So we've devised a series that we're going to run this week on the show called Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music. You're going to be hearing it here on the show, but also you'll be participating in it on soundcheck.org. The name is pretty self-explanatory. Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music. Now, about music is in parentheses. That's important. The question has to be about music. It can't be about horse racing. It can't be about soccer or scotch or anything like the things that you'd sort of rattle on about. It's got to be about music.
All right. So I know you, Joel. You've got a theme song for everything.
That's right. I have a theme song. This one's been particularly hard, so I'm just going to introduce. This is a draft. It's not the final theme song. So, Irene, let's hear what could be the theme to Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music.
Ask me, ask me, ask me.
Hey, let me give them what they asking for. Hey.
There are more questions than answers.
Now, it's the ending that I have a problem with there. It's that they can ask you something, but then, John, you won't necessarily say that you love them. I feel like that's the flaw in this theme. So now, there really are no real rules here. You can ask John Schaefer anything about music. That's why we called it that. But I want to sort of get you thinking about things you could ask John Schaefer if you're so inclined. So you could ask for advice. You might ask John a personal question about his personal music taste. Or you can try to stump John Schaefer.
All right.
Very smart guy about music, but I think there are a lot of smarty pants out there in the Soundcheck audience. So you can try to stump John Schaefer. So you can ask your question by posting it on soundcheck.org. Or you can leave your question on our listener line, 866-939-1612. We might play your question on the air, and John might answer it. So that number again, 866-939-1612.
I am easily stumpable.
Okay. Here's an example of the kinds of questions that people might ask. We went around the building here at WNYC and asked some of our colleagues for their questions. So here's an example of the advice kind of question.
Hi, I'm Beth Furtick, WNYC education reporter. John, my question for you is, who is the best pedal steel guitar player in the U.S. right now, and can you recommend a new recording by this person?
Well, this is always a matter of personal taste, but I think in this case, I have an answer that brooks no argument. Greg Lease is the finest pedal steel guitar player in Nashville and therefore anywhere in the United States. Beth asked for a recording. He's mostly a sideman. He's played with everybody from Bill Frisell to Johnny Cash to my favorite moment of his, which comes at the end of a song by John Doe, formerly of the band X. The song is called Grain of Salt, and it's just this amazing, emotive pedal steel guitar solo. It's brilliant.
There you go, Beth Furtick of the WNYC Newsroom. The other kind of question that we talked about, the personal taste question.
Hi, John. This is Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money at WNYC. My question for you is, what's your favorite Taylor Swift song?
John?
Yeah, not the biggest fan, but I am going to have to say that We Are Never, Ever Getting Back Together. You know, the chorus is irresistible, and the part of the song that I should absolutely hate, where she's dissing the guy for listening to an indie record that's so much cooler than hers, I can't help it. It's just so cheeky, the moment works.
I'm really gonna miss you picking fights, and me falling for it, screaming that I'm right, and you would hide away and find your peace of mind with some indie record that's much cooler than mine.
Anna Sale, there you have it, John Schaefer's favorite Taylor Swift song. Okay, a third question that you might ask John Schaefer, the stump John Schaefer question.
Hi, this is Elliot Forrest from WQXR. John, my question for you is, could you define the following musical periods in five words or less and give one example of a composer from each? This would really help me out. Baroque, classical, romantic, and contemporary.
Baroque first. Based on courtly dance forms. Oh, wait a minute. Based on courtly dance. That's five words already. This is going to be tougher than I thought.
All right, okay.
Example, of course, Johann Sebastian Bach. Classical. Getting more emotional. Sturm und Drang. Can I use Sturm und Drang as like one term?
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
And a good example would be early Beethoven or, let's say, Mozart.
Okay.
Romantic. Looser harmonies, big emotional sweep. There's my five words. Late Beethoven's a good example, or I'll go for Liszt. And what was the fourth? Contemporary.
Contemporary.
All bets are off. I get one more word. Polystylistic. Many, many examples. I think I'll go with David Del Tredici, who throws everything but the kitchen sink into some of his pieces.
There you have it. You can get college credit through Ask John Schaefer Anything. Okay, now, those, I'm going to admit, John, you maybe knew about those before we walked into the studio today.
Yeah, but those were easy.
They were, okay. I'm going to throw one more at you, real stump John Schaefer question. This comes from Jeff Spurgeon, also a host at our classical sister station, WQXR.
John, there are two instruments I know of that you play by not touching them. One is the theremin, which is played by manipulating magnetic fields through hand motions, and the other is the symphony orchestra, which is played by manipulating people through hand motions. So, two questions. Is there any other instrument you play by not touching it? And what's the instrument you touch the most to play it?
Okay, so a real wild card question. So, what is another instrument that you play without touching it?
I would say the human voice.
Oh, that's a deep thought.
It's okay. An instrument.
Interesting. Okay. Now, maybe even more abstract. Which instrument do you play by touching it the most?
I'm going to say the human voice. It is, after all, a part of it. Hey, man, you're going to throw me these goofy questions. Okay. I'm going to give you the goofy answers.
Okay, all right. I thought that there was a not-ready-for-radio answer coming with that particular. those are four good examples of questions that you can ask in this week's series, Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music. You can ask your question by posting it on soundcheck.org. You can leave your question on our listener line at 866-939-1612. Again, we might use your question on the air. And John might answer it, 866-939-1612. And we're going to be doing some other stuff online this week, so make sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr, and we'll let you know what we're doing for Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music.
And I will answer And occasionally, I'll even answer correctly. Oh, I just thought of another instrument you don't touch, the MIDI data glove. You put the glove on your hand, and when you move it through the air, the computer, which you're not touching, makes music. I know, sorry, I'll stop now. Let's hear some live music. Alejandra Ribera, the Canadian singer and songwriter, she and her band are here. We'll talk with her and get the lowdown on her new album called La Boca in a little while, but since the band is here and ready to go, let's hear a song. This is called Goodnight Persephone.
And as you breathe the fumes, you think maybe I could make myself at home here. But it seeps in Sweden and it comes down heavy. By the time you come to, they're playing rock, rock steady, and the buzz of the pinball machine in the other room. If you don't get up on your feet, we'll be here a week. It's gonna be the longest winter that you've ever seen. You can feel it in your bones. Keep your secret in this catacomb. So keep this light burning bright for me. Oh, won't you keep this light burning bright for me? Oh, won't you keep this light burning bright for me? Oh, won't you keep this light burning bright for me? Oh, won't you keep this light burning bright for me?
That's live music in the Soundcheck studio from Alejandra Ribera. The song is called Goodnight Persephone. We'll meet her and her trio, and we'll hear more live music later on in the show. But first... For some people, the passing of Labor Day marks the unofficial end of summer, but here at Soundcheck, we are not quite done. with our Summer of 94 series. Up next, a look back at a trip-hop classic, the album Dummy by the English group Portishead, which just celebrated its 20th birthday. That's next on Soundcheck.
I'm Kristen from Williamsburg, and you're listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
I'm so tired of playing with this bow and arrow.
All this summer on the show, we've been looking back at some of the remarkable music that was released between May and September of 1994, 20 years ago. Up next in the series, the debut album from the English band Portishead. The record was called Dummy. Even though there was a bumper crop of great albums released in that summer of 94, Portishead's debut still stands out as one of the most unusual and most influential. And joining me to talk about Dummy is our frequent guest, Chris Melanfi. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John. How are you?
So we're listening to Glory Box.
Right.
This is the closing track on the record. Is this a good reminder of why this album is so important?
I'd say so. I mean, this song in particular has had a really strong legacy. It's appeared in any number of movies over the years. It's one of the most signature songs, if not the signature song of Dummy, the album by Portishead, mm-hmm. which came out in 1994.
Now, people listening carefully might think we were playing this from vinyl because there's some surface noise, but that is, in fact, part of the sound of the song.
Absolutely. In fact, Jeff Barrow, one of the co-founders of Portishead, the band, would sometimes even transfer stuff that wasn't originally on vinyl back to vinyl just so he could scratch it for the surface noise and the ability to manipulate it. So, yeah, this is a band that loved that deep, thick sound.
Yeah, and also the kind of anachronistic, the creative anachronism of hearing the snap, crackle, and pop of an old LP on a brand new record.
Absolutely.
And so Portishead becomes synonymous with a style that comes to be known as trip-hop. What is trip-hop?
Trip-hop is kind of a bastard genre that melds together a number of different strains, and it's pretty resolutely British, even though some American acts mm-hmm. eventually picked up on it. It's a down-tempo, sort of breakbeat and sample-based post-hip-hop music based largely in the city of Bristol in England. What makes Bristol kind of an important locus for the movement is Bristol was an interesting city that had a hip-hop scene. It had a dub reggae scene. They were used to down-tempo beats. And so they were kind of taking American hip-hop, obviously a U.S. invention, and kind of reinventing it in their own image. There are a couple important records that predate
yes.
Dummy that are vital to the formation of this genre. Most notably, Blue Lines, an album that came out in 1991 by the band Massive Attack, which basically was very revolutionary for the time. It was kind of a dance album, kind of a hip-hop informed album, but, you know, very mellow, slower grooves, you know, not afraid to chill out.
Right.
And Jeff Barrow, one of the co-founders of Portishead, actually was one of the co-creators or engineers on that album. Not a primary, but in the background.
So a very incestuous little scene there in Bristol because, you know, the holy trinity of trip-hop would come to be Portishead, Massive Attack, and Tricky.
Exactly.
Who comes out of Massive Attack.
That's right. So all three of these acts yeah. kind of overlapped with each other. That's right.
So although trip-hop, though Massive Attack and trip-hop to an extent predate Portishead's record Dummy, this becomes the Sgt. Pepper of the movement.
Exactly. I like to say that, you know, there are always albums that are not the first of something, but they are the signature of something or the premier version of something, the popularizer, right? So Sgt. Pepper is not the first concept album, but it's the thing that popularized the idea of the concept mm-hmm. album. By the same token, Dummy is not the first trip-hop album or even the first album that sounded entirely like this, but it's definitely, if you say trip-hop to somebody, they're going to think of Dummy, and it's probably the most popular.
And they're probably going to think of this song, which became a hit on both sides of the Atlantic. From the band Portishead, this is Sour Times.
To pretend that one can find the fantasies and morning rose will be my food, hidden lies, courtesies that I despise in life.
Sour Times, hit song from the album Dummy by the British band Portishead 20 years ago. And, you know, I suppose, Chris, if you had never seen the video for that song,
right,
just listening to that clip of the song, you would expect something noirish, you know, underworld, spy, assassin, thriller kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And that's what you get.
And that's exactly what you get. And if you watch the music video, that is precisely what you get. It's a very cinematic song. It's based around a sample of a Lalo Schifrin track, not the thing he's most famous for, the Mission Impossible theme,
right,
but a piece of incidental music from Mission Impossible that Lalo Schifrin composed.
So that's the sample,
exactly,
that we hear underneath.
Exactly. They
and the video is, by the way, on our website at soundcheck.org, so check it out if you're not familiar with it.
That's right. And it actually, believe it or not, all of the bits of the video come from a short film that Portishead made just before the album came out called To Kill a Dead Man. To this day, if you buy the CD of Dummy, you'll see in the corner a very small recreation of a poster for a movie called To Kill a Dead Man. To Kill a Dead Man is an 11-minute film. It's not even very long. I don't think it got a formal theatrical release. But it sets the template for everything Portishead did, because it's like an assassination thriller. It's wordless. It's very evocative. It's very noir. Mm-hmm. And all of the scenes, including the cover of the album, by the way. The cover of the album is a still of lead singer Beth Gibbons from the To Kill a Dead Man movie and subsequently the Sour Times music video.
Chris Melanfi is with us on Soundcheck, pop chart columnist, contributor to Pitchfork and Slate, and a frequent guest in the Soundcheck studio. We're looking back at another of the great records of the summer of 94, Dummy, released by the English band Portishead 20 years ago. And how successful was this record?
It was very successful, but over a long, slow period. It made waves in the UK after just a few months, and it started to pick up a buzz in America over the winter of 1995. So I remember the first time I heard Sour Times on the radio was something like January or February of 1995, and it actually made our Hot 100. It got as high as number 53 on the Modern Rock chart, chart you and I were talking about earlier this summer. It actually made the top five. So mm-hmm. It was a pretty serious radio hit in America. The album ultimately went gold in America in 1997. It sold platinum level by the mid-2000s, so it kind of became a real word-of-mouth album. In America, it's sold more than 1.1 million copies at this point, and it's double platinum in the UK.
Now, that summer of 94, as we've already discussed on Soundcheck this summer, saw Park Life by Blur.
Right.
Definitely Maybe by Oasis.
Right.
You had albums by Pulp and Suede and PJ Harvey.
Uh-huh. Peak of Britpop.
And yet it was this record that won the Mercury Prize.
That's right. It defeated a murderer's row of great mid-90s UK albums, including for that year it was up against Oasis's Different Class and PJ Harvey's To Bring You My Love and Tricky's Maxine Quay, which is actually a 95 record but was in the same pool of competitors, and Dummy beat them all.
So who are these people? You mentioned they come from Bristol.
That's right.
Who is Portishead?
All right, so Jeff Barrow is the co-founder, and he's the primary instrumentalist. The band is actually named for a coastal town, Portishead, near Bristol, where he lived as a teenager. He is a perfectionist and a studio creature, and he hates playing live, although they have played mm-hmm. live. And he is all about sort of the craft and the sound. As I said before, he will manipulate sounds any which way, and he's been quoted in many interviews saying that he aims not to repeat himself. If you buy the two subsequent Portishead albums, there have only been three thus far, you'll hear that each one gradually deconstructs the sound even further. Then the other co-founder is Beth Gibbons. She's the singer. She's painfully shy. She's known to avoid interviews. I think I track down maybe one actual interview with her. She'll like frequently hide behind cases on stage. Has a beautiful voice. She's
very torchy, kind of
torchy. But what's great about her too is she's versatile. Like mm-hmm. she can have a baby doll kittenish voice in one track. She can sound like Sade in another track. So she can go from throaty to almost inflected, almost poppy on some tracks. The only other primary member, he's kind of the addendum to the group, is Adrian Utley, who's a guitarist and keyboardist. He was with the Jazz Messengers, and he's kind of a quiet MVP on the record. He
plays guitar, and he's very, very talented.
Well, one of the sounds that really struck listeners when they first heard Dummy 20 years ago was the sound of Beth Gibbons' voice. And this is the song we first heard it on. This is the lead-off track from the Portishead record, Dummy. It's called Mysterons. Mysterons, the song lead-off cut from the album Dummy by the British band Portishead, released 20 years ago this summer. Chris, I got to say, the opening 20 seconds of this record, when you think about it, when you parse that, it's remarkable. You've got the turntable scratching, so you're referencing hip-hop,
right,
but you've got this brooding kind of synth thing going underneath.
Yep.
And then this audio sleight of hand, where what sounds like a female voice comes in, and is then revealed when it goes higher to not be a human voice at all, and only then does the singer actually come in.
Exactly. I mean, it's almost a sampler in the very first track, in the very first 30 seconds of what you're going to get on the rest of the album. It's a little bit of everything. It's a wonderful mishmash. By the way, you hear the sound of what sounds like a theremin on that record. It's actually a synthesizer tuned to sound like a theremin, but it's got that spooky sound, and as we've discussed frequently on Soundcheck, you know, the theremin is famous for, movie scores and you know, that spooky sound. You hear it, and that's immediately what you think of. And then, Beth's voice is this kind of precious jewel coming in. It's really right from the start, you know what you're going to get with this album.
Yeah. And the album, 20 years on, is now being reissued on vinyl.
Yeah.
Which somehow seems appropriate. Although, regarding the reissue of the album, Jeff Barrow, the primary force behind the band, told Rolling Stone magazine, and I'll quote here,
sure,
"Special editions have been a dirty word because they've just basically been a tool of the industry to try and squeeze more money out of the fan or the music buyer. We would only do that if we were maybe forced into it by some label contractual thing." Do you think Portishead were forced into doing this?
I don't know. I have a hard time believing Portishead have ever been forced into doing much of anything. I mean, they have taken, you know, whole decades between albums. So if they finally are reissuing the album on vinyl, it's probably because they decided it was time. Goodness knows the album has a great legacy, and releasing it on vinyl makes a lot of sense.
Why do you think the album appealed to a good number of people at first, and then an even exponentially larger number of people over the years?
You know, as long as we're talking about cynical things Jeff Barrow has said, I mean, he once said that, you know, we never considered ourselves trip-hop. We've got nothing to do with the music that was spawned by these acts. And, you know, we ended up being listened to by England's, quote, middle-class housewives, the fondue set. You know, he almost hated the reputation that Dummy gave them, you know, and he and Beth Gibbons worked to distance themselves from it forevermore. But the fact is, it connected with people. It was romantic in a way that people had never heard before. I mean, if you think about where we were at in 1994, you know, hip-hop had already gone through a couple of phases.
Mm-hmm.
And now along comes this music that's entirely hip-hop informed, using many of the same techniques, yet it's brooding, it's romantic, it's dark, it's emotional in ways that hip-hop hadn't quite done previously. You'd heard it in certain rap songs, but it was kind of a new breed. And since then, you've heard this album and what it has wrought absorbed into hip hop itself. When you hear a dark track from Kanye West or The Weeknd, you know, you're definitely hearing elements of that emo trip-hop vibe from Portishead coming through, you know, 20 years later. Mm-hmm. So it's got long legs.
And 20 years ago, if you were into Sade, it wasn't such a big leap to some of the ballads on this record.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, whatever Jeff and the band think of it, it is really good, you know, atmosphere music, boudoir music. Here in New York City, if you walk into a restaurant, there's still a pretty good chance you're going to hear it playing. It's very evocative music.
The album is Dummy by Portishead, and this track is called It Could Be Sweet. Song It Could Be Sweet from the band Portishead from their now 20-year-old album called Dummy, released in the summer of 94, 20 years ago. Chris Melanfi, looking back at this record as part of our summer-long 20th anniversary retrospective of what was, Chris, a pretty awesome summer music.
It really was, yeah. And, you know, when you think of this one kind of capping it off, coming out in August and taking us into the fall and winter, I mean, it really does cap a great roster of albums.
And it takes us further than that because it seems to spawn a host of imitators. I mean, we mentioned the big three of trip-hop, you know, Tricky, Massive Attack,
right,
and this band, Portishead. But, you know, they sort of sprout like mushrooms after a storm once Dummy comes.
Oh, totally. I mean, you know, whether it was, you know, the really good acts like Tricky, you know, who became more popular as a result of Dummy's success, or it's kind of like these more poppy imitators, the Sneaker Pimps or Hoover Phonic. You know, you had like kind of poppy bands that took the trip hop into a different direction, like Olive and so forth. Like, it definitely, if there was a period in the mid-90s where you sort of felt like this was the, you know, atmosphere of, you know, retail stores, restaurants, cafes, you know, it still has tentacles, you know, even into today. I mean, whenever you hear sort of a down-tempo beat, you know, on a dance record or a hip-hop record, there are elements of Dummy and of Portishead even in that. So it's definitely got a legacy.
And, you know, one of my favorite songs of that decade, Teardrop by Massive Attack,
sure,
from their album Mezzanine, very close to what we just heard from Portishead's Dummy. And, of course, that would become a huge cultural phenomenon when it was absorbed into the TV making machine as the theme from the show House,
exactly. So, yeah, you know, you're still hearing these sounds, even if you don't know you're hearing it.
Right,
you're hearing
right.
The footprints of Dummy.
So,
to this day.
House aside, what happens to trip hop once we get in further into the 90s and into the
trip hop really
aughts?
Yeah, trip hop really gets absorbed pretty quickly and metabolized and sort of infiltrates dance music in Britain. You know, all sorts of other subgenres of dance come and go, like jungle and thereafter. And you know, in America, we absorb some of these sounds into hip hop, and you know, now if you're hearing dance music. I mean, there are records on the radio right now. There's a Kaiser song called Hideaway right now that, for all the world, reminds me of Portishead. It's got, you know, the down-tempo beat combined with, an up-tempo vocal. It's basically gotten deeper into the culture and metabolized into the culture.
And Dummy, how does it hold up 20 years later?
You know, I've been listening to this album nonstop for the last couple of days preparing for this segment, and I must say I don't get sick of it. It just really is extremely durable, and despite, you know, years of overplay both in public and private settings, it's a pretty great record.
Portishead's Dummy was released 20 years ago in 1994. Chris Melanfi, pop chart columnist and contributor to Pitchfork and Slate, is a frequent guest here on Soundcheck. and has joined us to look back at this great old album from this British trio / quartet. Chris, great to see you again. Thanks very much.
Thank you, John.
Ooh, can't anybody see? We've got a war to fight. Never find our way, regardless of what they say. How can it feel this wrong? From this moment, how can it feel?
Up next, more music in our studio from the Canadian singer and songwriter Alejandra Ribera, and we'll talk about her new album called La Boca. That's next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Canadian singer Alejandra Ribera has been known to move audiences to tears, but you may well ask, what language is she using when she does so? Because Alejandra sings in French, Spanish, and English. In fact, one of the English-language songs off her Spanish-titled album La Boca moved her fellow Canadians to award her a prestigious songwriting prize. The song in question is called I Want, and Alejandra Ribera is here with her band in the Soundcheck studio to play it for us. Here is Alejandra Ribera with I Want.
You had the gun, I had the horse. We took a photograph. Now I can't find my way back. Was a dream. Well, I'm down this rabbit hole. Even the madness cannot shield this soul. There's so much labor just in breathing lately. There's so much labor just in breathing lately. There is so much labor just in breathing.
The power of a song, and I want the
The song is I Want from the Canadian singer and songwriter Alejandra Ribera, live in the Soundcheck studio with Jean-Sebastian Williams playing the guitar and doing some backing vocals and Zach Lober playing the acoustic stand-up bass here in the Soundcheck studio. Alejandra Ribera, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having us.
And congratulations. This was the song that won you the SOCON Songwriting Prize.
Yeah.
What indeed. Is that?
It's the Society of Authors and Composers of Canada. So it's
like ASCAP.
Exactly, yeah. So that was a really, really touching thing to get the songwriting prize for the year.
Isn't that like a voting thing? I mean, it's actual fans as opposed to a clique of songwriters in a room somewhere.
Exactly, yeah. There's a panel of judges that choose who the finalists will be, and then the decision's made by the public.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
So it's an English language song. Did it start out? I mean, you write in English, French, Spanish. Do the languages always stay fixed once you start down a path with a song?
Well, it's funny because I moved to Montreal a couple of years ago, and so suddenly I'm kind of speaking in this melange of like French and English, half and half all the time. So lately I've been writing tunes, and I'll find that sort of like the tune La Boca, which is the title of a mm-hmm. track from the record, that it just made sense that certain things were said in Spanish and certain things were said in English. But it's often a choice about the sonic quality of the words, like the architecture of the, you know, consonants.
So a line may scan better in one language or another.
Yes, exactly.
What did you grow up? You grew up in Toronto, so speaking English.
Yes.
But was Spanish spoken in the house as well?
It was at one point because my father's from Argentina. So we moved to Argentina when I was about 1.5. And that was essentially my first language. But we came back after a year. And when my parents separated, I really lost the language. Mm. So it's strange. It's really familiar for me to pronounce, but I'm not actually fluent in it. So writing songs takes an extremely long time.
So is English your default? I mean,
yes, yeah certainly.
So moving to Montreal, I mean, Montreal has had a kind of vibrant music scene. I mean, you know, people know about Arcade Fire, you know, big indie rock thing, but there's a spectacular improvising music, not necessarily jazz, but an improvising yeah. music, a world music scene. Have you, you know, what circle of friends do you travel in there?
Well, when I first arrived, I was invited to be a part of a tribute. And so my first week there, I got to meet folks like Patrick Watson and the Barr Brothers and Marie-Jo Thériault and Bia, who's become a good friend. She's a singer from Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Watson, by the way, folks can find his Soundcheck appearances on our website at soundcheck.org. You said it was a tribute. Was this the tribute to Lhasa?
Yes.
This American-born but Canadian-based singer who, yes. like you, sung in English, French and Spanish, mm-hmm. and who sadly passed away when she was like 37 or 38.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who I heard of after she had passed away because okay. I started getting all these recordings from different people writing songs about this woman.
Mm.
And it, you know, it was like from all these different kind of musical circles. The improvisers did something, the indie rockers did something. So, you know, it seems like there is some kind of cross-pollination happening there.
Yeah, it's one of the things I like about the scene in Montreal is that you're not limited to just sort of listening to the genre in which you work and thinking, oh, well, they make, you know, they're indie rock, so they won't like what I do. No, there's a lot of crossover, which is really fun. Yeah.
So where are you? Are you in some gray area between those different scenes?
I'm bouncing around, I suppose.
Yeah. You've mentioned in interviews before that there are three B's in your life, but it's not Bach, Beethoven, Brahms. It's
no.
Björk, Bette Midler, and Billy Connolly.
Yeah, indeed.
Björk and Bette Midler, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Connolly?
There's sort of a rage and a sort of uproar of energy that I identify with when I see him on stage. He just kind of loses it, and it's like a river of energy. And I feel the same thing when I play. And I really, the thing that I respect most about those three is that just their extreme generosity to the audience, you know? There's a real consciousness and awareness of that. It's not like, oh, no, we're too cool to, you know, bother to show you a good time. You're just going to sit back and take it in, and either you get it or you don't.
Right,
no,
right.
It's very generous. Yeah.
And Billy Connolly, you know, being Scottish, you know, we think of the Scots as being a very dour people, and he's
like... No, he's anything but, and I love him so much because half my family is Argentinian, but the other half is Glaswegian. They're from Scotland. And so I grew up hearing these horrible, well, not horrible, but hearing these stories about Scotland that gave me the impression that it's like, you know, the cover of a shortbread tin. And then when I was 19, I moved to Glasgow for a few months, and I discovered that it was not at all that, and there was a whole group of wildly fierce and, you know, passionate people.
The first time I heard your record, La Boca, I think I was probably three quarters, maybe four fifths into your cover of the Proclaimers song before I realized what I was listening to. It's like, oh, this is that song.
Mm-hmm.
"500 Miles," very anthemic song as they do it, and you turn it into something really kind of bereft and emotional, and it's really beautiful.
Thank you.
And I would walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500 miles just to be.
The album's called La Boca. It is out now. Alejandra Ribera is with us here in the Soundcheck studio. So this next song, Cien Lunas, what does that mean?
It means 100 moons. And it was a story, actually, of my grandmother, right before we left for Argentina, taking me out onto the front porch of her house in Toronto and saying to me, "Right, you're about to go somewhere so far away you can't even imagine, but if you ever miss us, you see that moon right there?" And the moon had just risen in the sky. And she said, "Even when you're all the way in South America and you see that moon, we're both under the same moon, and so we're always close." So that was kind of the visual imagery that gave birth to this tune.
Nice. Yeah. You want to play it for us?
Certainly.
All right. Alejandra Ribera is the singer, Jean-Sebastian Williams playing guitar, Zach Lober playing the acoustic bass. They are here in the Soundcheck studio. The song is called Cien Lunas, 100 Moons.
La luna regresa a su trono poco a poco. Ella revela su cara, me da consuelo cuando pienso que no te puedo ver, pero tú estás bajo la luz de la misma luna. Si pudiese volver a tus brazos, sabiendo que nuestro amor fue bastante, entonces la luz de 100 lunas. Yo pido que las estrellas pueden intervenir, pero solo se ríen de mí. Yo pregunto al río por qué debo sufrir. Si pudiese volver a tus brazos, sabiendo que nuestro amor fue bastante, entonces la luz de 100 lunas. Sabiendo que no es
Once again, Alejandra Ribera live on Soundcheck with a song called Cien Lunas, 100 Moons. You'll find it on her album called La Boca, which is out now. Would it be weird for me to say that you sound like a much older woman on that song?
It's so funny. My friend Bea and I, we just recorded for her record a cover of Cuckoo Cuckoo Paloma. And I said to her afterwards, I was like, oh, I like this. I sound like 65 years old. This is great.
Well, you know, for a song that began with the image of your grandmother taking you out on the porch, I guess, you know, it's sort of appropriate. You do have this incredibly husky singing voice. Is that the result of too much whiskey and cigarettes? I mean, how did that happen?
Maybe.
You don't want to give away trade secrets.
Yeah, no, and I don't know how to make shifty eyes over the radio.
Alejandra Ribera with us on Soundcheck today. The album La Boca is out now. It really is a beautiful record. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad you like it.
Today we're saying goodbye to our intern, Michael Loewinger, who's heading back to school at NYU, where he works at their terrific college radio station, WNYU. Hi, Micah.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good. So now, for your going away present, for all your hard work here, we've invited you to play the game that Joel introduced at the top of the show. Ask John Schaefer anything about music. What, Micah, is your question?
Okay, John. How do you nerd out about music to friends and family without alienating them?
Ooh, I'm not sure that is possible. If you're really going to geek out about music or an artist or an instrument or a style, you will end up sounding like a geek. And anyone who in the room who is not geeking there with you will feel sort of put out.
So fair enough.
It's a really tough thing. And in the breaks in the show, Joel and I have since been arguing about my answers to the first round of questions. So, you know, we've been sort of geeking out here in the studio, but not on air because that would just alienate everybody. You got another one?
Yes. Okay. How do I make a lot of money in music?
Ah, well, that's easily answered. There's a great old Monty Python routine where you call in and ask the experts how to do things, and one of the callers says, how do you play the flute? And the answer is, well, you blow into this hole here and put your hands on the instrument there, and the music comes out, and it sounds great. It's a similar thing with what you're saying. Make a lot of money is write a great song, get yourself signed to a big record label with a big-name producer, and just watch the money come rolling in.
Some people say it's folly, but I'd rather have the lolly. With money, you can make a splash.
Easy. Easy
right.
Peasy.
Thank you very much.
All right, Micah, thanks for being with us. And thanks for all of your support and help during this semester. Good luck at NYU.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks.
You can keep your Marxist ways, but it's only just a phase. For it's money, money, money makes the world go round.
Money, 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 money.
Soundcheck listeners, your questions, serious or not, you can leave them on our website at soundcheck.org, or you can leave a voicemail at our listener line, which is 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. And follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, or Twitter to keep up with what we're lining up for the rest of the week. Tomorrow on the show, our How to Be Smarter series tackles a big idea in music. Composer and conductor Rob Capello joins us to help make us smarter about counterpoint. Plus, cellist Maya Beiser joins us. Her latest project is a series of covers, or uncovers as she calls them, of classic rock songs by Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Howlin' Wolf, and more. She and her classical power trio will play live. That's tomorrow on the show. That does it for today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.